Welcome to Comes Naturally Podcast. We are
Joe,
Mike,
I'm Cody. On today's episode, we are going to do favorites. We do favorite comic book stories from all over, not just one character, but we're just going to talk about our favorite, a bunch of our favorite comic book story arcs and their characters.
Yeah, we're not necessarily given a you know, top to bottom list on this one. We're doing more of just kind of broadening out. Picking out some personal favorites, not really narrowing it down to, you know, best of all time or anything like that. Just trying to hit as many different genres in it as we can.
So we're going to start with Michael today.
All right. So the first one I brought up was because I'm fairly new to reading comics. I only started a few years ago. The very first graphic novel that I ever read was Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
And that story got me hooked into comics, is the reason I still read comics today, is the reason I have a pretty healthy collection of comic books now. And I still go back and I read that one every few months because it's a really fun read and it's got tons of crazy shit in it. So just kind of brief overview of Old Man Logan without giving away any spoilers.
Is Logan old?
He's not a young man.
Okay.
By any stretch. But yeah, so basically this story takes place in the far future. We have the country is basically divided up in what is it, Cody, like four
regions?
Yeah.
Regions where a supervillain controls each region. It's basically like in the future, if the bad guys won and the good guys were all either killed or driven away and couldn't really do anything, much like Old Man Logan, not Wolverine anymore. He has a family, he lives in the region of the country where he is basically having to pay rent to the Hulks, which is a huge hillbilly family now.
Inbred.
Yeah, really bad. Inbred hillbilly.
They're pretty family. Gnarly looking.
They're gross, man. Mm-hmm. And then you get to, like, just like the little things about them, like when they come in, when they first come into the story, they're on the Fantastic Four's ship thing.
Fantastic Jet.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and it's all like you can barely see the Fours. They're kind of painted over with green paint now to match the Hulk stuff. Really messed up. So just a rough overview of the story. Logan hasn't basically popped his claws in a really, really long time. Cody's reaching.
That sounds dirty.
Cody's reaching for the book right now, so I think he's gonna read it while we're talking.
And done.
So he hasn't really became Wolverine in a long time. He doesn't fight anymore. He's struggling to provide for his family. He's basically a farmer. No rain, bad droughts, can't supply anymore. And the whole story, you're getting teased about why he doesn't basically become Wolverine, rise up and fight back like he used to. And so that's the big common thing going through the whole story that you don't really want to give a lot away. But essentially, he finds himself traveling through the country with his old buddy Hawkeye, who is crazy as shit. He's got one arm and he's blind,
right? Yeah, I believe he's blind. Yeah,
this is one where he's blind, but still a super badass.
One arm.
One arm in this one?
Yeah.
No. Oh. Oh my! I'm getting.
Yeah, you had two arms. He was just blind.
No, Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
I think of Green Arrow.
Sorry, I'm getting genres mixed up or stories mixed up, but
anyway.
So basically, they have to essentially stop some bad guy stuff.
To say this, to shorten the story.
Yeah, because I want to give a whole lot away. It's super violent, by the way. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really violent. And so basically you go through the whole story. Hawkeye's kicking ass. Logan is doing what he can. Fight. Yeah, but trying to remain peaceful. Like, basically saving Hawkeye's ass and getting out of situations.
And running the entire time.
Yeah, Hawkeye's bugging him, like, you know, why don't you pop the claws? Why don't you pop the claws? What happened? What happened? You keep getting brief little flashbacks as to what happened. And then by the time when it comes to actually say, you know, when they give you the big reveal of why he doesn't basically become Wolverine anymore, super fucked up. And I don't know, like, maybe because I never really read comics before, I did not see this twist coming at all. A lot of you listening probably read it, and you might have guessed it or not. I don't know. Did you, Cody, when you first read it, did you kind of know what was going on? Did you see the writing on the wall? Or
no, I mean, it took me by complete surprise. And when you get to the overall bad guy of the story, it does take the wind out of your sails. You're just like, what is going on? It's crazy. Of course, when you find out how the whole story comes about too, because you find out before the end, it's just like crazy. Like Mark Miller, who wrote the book, has this weird like way of finding these twists that you don't really see coming out of a lot of things that he does. But this one was like, this is set up, like, and you have to know Marvel, like, for to write this story, you would have to know Marvel very, very well, and like the dynamic of a lot of the characters and things like that. Incredible way he used the universe, and like, it's like a weird post-apocalyptic world that he has set up in this, where, like Mike was saying, villains have taken over due to something that happened in the past. And I mean, it's crazy the way that it just kind of ends up. But I mean, maybe to the end, I mean, and it's funny because like, he leaves it open for more, but like, in years has never ever mentioned or tried to do anything with it again. But it's like,
which a sequel would be fantastic.
Yes,
because if you haven't read this book, go out immediately. It's Cody's very excited about it as well. His pants are really tight. He
fooled you. I don't have pants on.
Man, come on, man. But yeah, so like I said, when the big reveal comes as to what actually happened to Wolverine in his past, it's super fucked up, and you actually feel bad. It's like, it's written so well to the point where you feel for the characters. And when somebody can do that and combine it with, you know, what you want out of a superhero comic book, and you have a writer who is so good at tapping into the emotions of the character, this one nails it on every aspect of it. It's just done perfectly. The art is fantastic in it as well. And like I said, you get to that point where you see what happened to Wolverine, you just feel super shitty for the guy. You feel really bad. You can't believe it happened. And now you know why certain things are the way in the book. It's a big reveal. But rest assured, spoilers, he fights again in the book. And when he finally decides that he's going to be Wolverine again, he is a whole lot of fucking Wolverine. He messes shit up bad. And then the very, very ending of it, last panel, you get a little twist that would leave it so wide open to a sequel that would be really, really good. But again, we haven't gotten this. And this was written in 2010, right? Or it began in 2008.
Yeah.
Ended in September of 09. And so it's been that many years and no sequel to it. So I don't know if we ever will. But if we ever do, I will be the first in line to get it, because it will be awesome.
Shit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And that was the first one for me.
All right. Joseph.
So my first one, and I was looking for this book for such a long, long time. In hardcover. I know I could find it in softcover, paperback, at Comic-Cons and everywhere, but I knew that there was a hardcover copy out there, and it took me years to find it. It is Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth, one of Grant Morrison's first books for DC, if I recall right, and one of his first
major books in general.
One of his first Batman books in general. So Grant Morrison did the story. The art was done by David McKean. I think that's really what drew me in first. I believe the first time I saw this, even though I knew who Grant Morrison was and the
you know, how great of a writer he was. I saw it on like a top 10 list of the you know, Batman books that you should be reading, and the artwork just drew me in because it was so weird and so wild and
way different than anything you see.
Yeah.
But from anywhere. I mean, still to this day, David Keenan's art is just tremendous. I mean, it stands out there. The overall detail of his art is unbelievable. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous because when you look at it, it looks like it's all over the place, but it has this beauty that helps tell the story the way it needs to be. And I mean, his art played so well into the story, the way they wrote the story, things like that. It's kind of hard to believe that ever would, you know, come about no matter what.
Yeah. And the story itself is about the inmates taking over Arkham. The Joker's broken out and he freed up all the other inmates, and he's forcing Batman to go into Arkham in order to play his game, in order to try and basically get everything back in order. So you'll see throughout the whole entire book, you'll see a lot of the main characters, main villains from Batman's rogue gallery, the Joker, Killer Croc. There's some amazing parts where he takes on the Mad Hatter, and even some really deep parts where he takes on Two-Face. In the book, that Two-Face has been going through therapy and tried to get his coin flipping problem fixed. Yep. But they're trying to wean him off of it. So instead of a coin, he has a D&D style dice to help him try and make decisions. But it's actually really messed him up, so he can't even really make any decisions at all.
So just doing a black and white, a 50-50 chance, and it's like a six or like might be a 20-sided die,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's super super messed up, but super awesome too.
And one of the cool things too is he brought up some of the villains that pops up. Like, how often do you see the Mad Hatter in a really good book? Like that. That's just part of what Morrison always brought to the table. Like, he could take characters that you really didn't give a shit about at all and write them in such an interesting way that makes you think, holy shit, like, I would love to see him be a main villain in its own arc, or I would love to see him have his own, you know, background story or an origin story done properly by Morrison. So he could take characters that are, you know, if you read the book and you saw the character listings and you weren't really familiar with how Grant Morrison writes his stuff, you could look at it and be like, I don't care about these characters. Like, nobody cares about these characters. Why should I read it? Well, read it anyway, because anything Grant Morrison does is fantastic. And yep. Again, with how I said, you know, if you have a writer that could tap in and make you feel, you know, sorry for a character and make you, you know, want to back a character or anything like that, I don't think anyone that I've ever read is better at it than Grant Morrison. So,
yeah. And I should also say, if you really enjoyed the Arkham Asylum games, because I think the first game took a lot from this book. I mean, the whole concept, obviously, but the fact that it added history to Arkham Asylum, because it also delved into Artemis Arkham and why he created it, about his mother, and I'm not going to give any of that away, because it's just super, super weird and super trippy.
And Paul Dini, who wrote or was the lead writer on the first two Arkham games, he even acknowledged that too in a couple interviews, knowing that like this was kind of a paying homage to his first graphic novel. So it's definitely got a lot of those qualities in it too.
And that's pretty much my first one to go with.
All right,
super good one. Like, really, really good.
Excellent one. So. And one of the very first standalone graphic novels DC ever did, too, because it came out only as a graphic novel. So.
And what did Morrison, like, agree to, like, a dollar?
Super cheap rate. Like, they didn't take any money ahead of time. Took a dollar for every unit sold, and it sold, like, some, like, 20.
Like, a million or something like that?
So 28,000 the first run.
First run, yeah. Yeah. They only trusted 28,000. They thought that was going to be enough, and that was sold out, like,
sold
I think
out.
The first day, yep. Right, as it yep, was pretty released. Much. So he made a shit ton of money on that, all back end too.
Yeah,
he pulled the old Jack Nicholson Joker and got some good coin at the end of that bad motherfucker.
Yes, sir. All right. So my first pick is going to be Invincible.
Yay!
Joe's barely read any
Robert Kirkman's other stuff that nobody.
So Robert Kirkman
first volume.
Yeah. So this is from Robert Kirkman. This is the Walking Dead's Robert Kirkman, and amongst many, many other things, but obviously most people know him for The Walking Dead. But this Invincible, this basic story is his own take on superheroes and the world that they live in, very similar to the DC and the Marvel universe, where there are these superpowered humanoid beings and aliens on Earth that fight crime and, of course, are criminals as well. And it's basically focuses around a family, Invincible, whose name is Mark Grayson. His father is Omni-Man, the first real superhero to be around and focused on. He has his own superhero team, much like the Justice League and the Avengers. They have all their own powers. In the book, Kirkman does a very good job of parodying a lot of superheroes from other franchises, like the Justice League, for example. Super awesome way he does it, too, because, I mean, pretty much you can look at him and be like, oh, that's Batman, that's Wonder Woman, that's Green Lantern. It's super hilarious the way they do him, because he gives them a different spin to it, and it's really funny. So, but the great thing about it is it's a sprawling story. Overall, the story itself is about Mark growing into his powers. At first, he didn't think he had any because he's half human and half alien. By the time he's in almost at the end of high school, he gains his powers, becomes strong like his father, can fly, things like that. And then he basically joins a superhero team of teens, kind of like his dad has, and they fight crime. But like, it's crazy because like the story just all of a sudden switches from like this happy-go-lucky superhero, fantasy teen story to the super dark. His dad turns. If you find out that his father is the alien race, the Voltrums are basically, he's sent to Earth to take over and enslave humanity for the reasons to basically spread the Empire's control over the universe. And of course, no one knows because he kept it secret the entire time. And then ends up like Mark, who is now an established superhero, has to fight his father and almost dies.
Yeah, he's legit no match for his dad. Yep. In the first battle that they meet.
Awesome. They're beating the shit out of each other, but you can see that his dad's kind of like holding back a little bit, and then he just snaps and starts just beating Mark to death. And this comic book is bloody. It is gory.
Yeah, and when you if you do go out and pick up, say, Volume 1 or the Compendium, which I would recommend because that'll give you the first 50 all in one and give you a really great feel for how the story is and give you most of it right there because it's 50. But when you first start reading it, you don't think it's going to be this super graphic, violent comic book. Like, it's the art is done in such a way where it kind of feels a little old school, too. It's real bright. It's not a dark book. It's really bright. A lot of teenagers in it. A lot of, colorful background. They do a lot of jokes in it, too. Like, they'll joke on, real life things that are going on. They'll give a lot of nods to just overall like nerd life, talking about picking up comics on Comic Book Wednesday, just dumb shit like that. And it kind of takes it's written well, so it draws you in, but then all of a sudden it gets violent quick and it catches you off guard. And then it doesn't, it doesn't take its foot off the gas forever after that.
Yeah. And I can really speak to that because I've only read the first volume of the first story arc. Yeah, thanks. But yeah, it's super simplistic in just the sense that it's a lot of what's going on in high school with Mark, and while the artwork isn't incredibly detailed, it is really bright. It is really nice to look at.
It's not so much that the art's not detailed. It looks like at first when you first look at it, it does look like a kid's comic book. It's very bright. The characters are very, obviously like CW-ish. They're very, all of them are good looking and things like that. But then it jumps into
CW
this.
CW male models.
Yep.
That's all.
So it jumps into this crazy, like he becomes a superhero and like he has to control his strength and all this stuff. And there's like all these like nods to geek things that Mike was saying. I mean, he goes to Comic-Con every year and he buys his favorite comic book, which is Science Dog, which actually Kirkman started writing as a real book later on, which is hilarious. But it's just the fact that the way they do the story, when it first starts off, you're so like, oh, this is a a book for all ages. And then all of a sudden, nope, someone gets their head cut off.
Yeah, it feels very normal at first is what I was getting.
Yeah, it's very, you're going to find it in the pages of any DC or Marvel book, and anybody who picks it up can read it. A few punches thrown, not really much blood. And then all of a sudden, something happens, and the entire, basically the Defenders, they get completely destroyed. All of them get killed. People are losing their heads, being eviscerated, guts are flying. I mean, it's ridiculous. The amount of violence just hits you away.
This book is set in a world where superheroes are a known thing,
very common.
A common thing, and everyone knows about them. Which opens up a lot of cool doors because it's not awkward, and you get a lot of one of my favorite things about it were all the other superheroes that were in it. Like, you really start finding yourself really excited when, like, a superhero that hasn't been in one of the issues for a few months comes back and they're badass and they help out and then go away. Like, you get so many different characters coming in and out while it's centered around, you know, a solid, you know, four or five characters. There's so many cool characters written. And anybody who thinks, like you said, when you think Robert Kirkman, everyone, you know, and rightfully so, goes right to The Walking Dead.
Yep.
Because that's what put him, you know, way over the top. That's the most popular TV show on right now. One of the best comics that's going. But for my money, Invincible is my personal favorite thing that he's done, because I read a couple volumes of Walking Dead. I watched the show. I'm way behind, but I've seen a lot of the show. And Invincible still holds up as my favorite thing that Robert Kirkman does.
It's so clever. That's my favorite part about the whole thing. Is that
smart.
It's really smart. It's well written. He has a lot of he plays on a lot of tropes, but in a fun way. It's not like he doesn't do it because he has no idea. He's basically shining a light on these tropes of, you know, these teen superheroes and how they are and their cookie cutter. But then, like, he basically starts going off in this crazy, like, there's the, like, being that he's half alien, and starts, like, he gives him like a life of their own. He gives them a backstory in the history of the aliens start coming about. I mean, it grows and it goes crazy, and it's like Mark starts leaving the planet, and like he'll patrol the planet from outer space. And I mean, it's crazy the way that, like, it went from this small idea of, like, superheroes on Earth to a universe full of, you know, out there. I mean, there's the not just Voltrums that are out there. There's tons of other human races. Alan the Alien, who's his first non-planetary being he meets, the first time they ever meet, it's hilarious because Alan shows up and he just starts fighting Invincible, and they have no idea, and he realizes, oh, he doesn't understand me because he doesn't have the mental link. And they link up, and then he explains the fact that every couple years he comes back, and Mark's father used to defend the planet from him to test that they were okay, like they were doing, and that he's actually from this intergalactic force that is basically waiting for this Voltrum force to come and take over the planet. And so Mark then mistakenly becomes the defender of the planet without him, like, really knowing it, and filling his father's shoes, even though it ends up, like, his father's the one that's supposed to be taking over the planet. So super hilarious the way they did it. But he's also, the great thing about it too, and Kirkman's great at this, and other stuff, because if you only read The Walking Dead, which is a fantastic comic book, fantastic TV show, it's very localized in what it is. It's, you know, it's survivors and zombie apocalypse. This is just goes everywhere. I mean, it's got human testing and alien crossbreeds, everything. But the cool thing about it is he brings in a lot of, like, taboo stuff, gay marriage, interspecies marriage for the one thing, which is crazy in it.
But super, I mean, like, frowned upon in the book too. Like, it's a big issue.
Yep.
And he hits it head on. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome. He just brings in all this cool stuff in it. So it's not just this stale superhero story. It just, I mean, it's amazing the way he did it.
And another thing that, you know, a lot of people don't seem to like, whether it goes to comics or movies or TV shows, are origin stories. You know, there's always debates about origin stories. For my money, this is one of the best origin stories of a superhero, because that's all the first, you know, the first volume of it really is what, about first 6-7 issues is really just about him training and becoming invincible.
Mm-hmm.
And as a origin story all on its own, it holds up with any of the best origin stories, because it's just so cleverly written and so well done, and you really get attached to the characters. It's a lot of fun.
And just to bring up the fact that, believe it or not, this is actually older than The Walking Dead. It started almost a full year before. So he was already working. He was past the first story arc before he even started, like before Walking Dead even came out. But that one was, Walking Dead was so much different than anything that's out there. So it gained a really big popularity. But for the long time, Robert Kirkman was known as the guy who did Invincible and Walking Dead. Now he's known as the guy who did The Walking Dead.
Which I'm hoping eventually he'll use his I'm the Walking Dead guy powers to give us something cool out of the Invincible world.
He has. It's been in interviews he said that there's a lot of people that have approached him for making an option for buying the rights to make it a movie and TV show. Ooh, and even on MTV, MTV actually bought and produced a motion comic that was aired on TV. But the problem with it is, Invincible loses a lot of its gravitas and allure when you have to cut it and edit it for things like TV, especially MTV, who doesn't want to have any bad light on them because of the thing. Mm-hmm. But they like, that was their first like venture into like the comic book and nerd realm. Is they're like, oh, we're gonna option this really popular series and we're going to try to make some out of it. But they really handicapped it because they took out a lot of what made Invincible different than everything else, which really is the violence. I mean, that's what made it stand apart, is the violence, the fact that these heroes are tearing people apart and they're ripping limbs off people and things like that. They cut all of that out of the series and made it essentially an animated CW show.
Which takes a lot out of it.
Yep, it loses everything because otherwise it just looks like a Teen Avengers movie.
Yeah.
So it, you know, it loses a lot of that. And so I did not like that. I never watched that when it was actually on TV. I rented air quotes from that online to see what it was like after I started reading Invincible, and it was just god awful. Motion comics, if you've never read, seen them before, they're one of the worst medias you could possibly imagine because they take still images and then make part of them move like they're animated,
and then they put voiceovers
and then put voice over them, so the mouths don't really move and the action isn't really synced up. It's just it's basically just a lazy man's way of reading a comic book because they say it, they talk to you, but the voice acting in it wasn't very good either.
Yeah, and I would dig any type of, you know, real attempt at it, whether it be a live-action movie, I think would be cool as shit. But I'd even take a weekly cartoon, fully animated. Yep. It obviously would have to be, you know, kind of that rated R.
Because otherwise you'd be handicapping it again.
Yeah, so like say like an HBO or Showtime or anybody really would grab it and truly animate it the way it's supposed to be, I think it would take off and be hugely popular.
And the crazy thing, though, is
there's just an online-only thing. Like, there's enough stuff out there. Like, Netflix can
option it for sure. Something. And it's funny. The really thing that makes it adult-themed is, like, the violence. There really is no bad language. There's no nudity. It's just literally the over-the-top violence, the blood and gore. But without that, you lose the atmosphere of the whole thing. So you lose a lot of what Invincible goes for. You could still do it. It'd still be funny, but it just wouldn't have that same like shock and appeal for it. And like just this over the topness that would like just makes it so much fun to read and experience is fantastic. I mean, the story now, the problem with the live action movie is you would get nowhere in the story. But the problem with the TV show is that it would be so expensive to make. So I think it'd have to be an animated show to do it, because it would just be it would be way too hard to do live action. It wouldn't work out very well. You could do it in a movie, but the story, you'd have to find a way to make a singular capsulized story for one movie that just doesn't happen because it's a huge narrative that just doesn't stop. And again,
you're cutting stuff out that could possibly be important.
Exactly. Yep. You'd have to, there's just so much going on. Just in the first story arc alone of like him becoming a superhero, like, and the way Kirkman writes, if you've ever read any of his stuff, it doesn't, like, when it ends a story arc, it doesn't just end that story and, like, the next one comes on, the next adventure of. It literally is, it's one big, like, there's no real end to it. It just kind of keeps going up and up, and the scale keeps getting bigger and bigger. But every jump, there's a little story arc that just jumps that has story that's out on top of it, and there's so many other background stories that are involving different characters, and, I mean, it's huge. So, I mean, it's crazy to think about. But it would be amazing to see, like, an animated version, because the way that they originally drew the art in it, it's very, very similar to an animated style. So, I mean, Cory Walker, who was the original artist on the book, the way he designed everybody is they're very, very animated. They have huge eyes and expressive looks and obviously unnatural bodies and stuff like that. They're hugely buff and things like that. But it's just it would lend itself well to an animated series more than anything else, I think. But that's mine, Invincible, Robert Kirkman. Michael, you have another one?
It's a really good one. My next one would be Joker that I want to bring up.
Ryan Azzarello.
That's right. Mm-hmm. This, again, like I said, I got into comics real late. The first one that I read was Old Man Logan. That's why I brought that one up first. I believe this was actually the second one that I read.
It's a weird jump, sir.
Yeah, because I wanted to when I first started reading comics, I wanted to get different, you know, feels of books, different styles. And I researched, you know, a lot of who some of the best writers were. And this was kind of stuff that I found. And again, if Old Man Logan got me hooked, Joker kept me on. Like, it was amazing. And there's not a lot of explaining that I want to do because it will give a lot of some of the story points away. But this is not a Batman book. Batman is in it very, very little.
Wasn't it just towards the end
he was in it? Yeah, really? Just towards the very end, you get a little bit of Batman in it. This is a Joker book, and the other characters. So essentially, the idea behind it is Joker is released from Arkham, gets picked up by somebody he doesn't know. Was it Frost? Was the guy who picked him up, and he's basically a Joker henchman at that point, but a new guy. And Joker takes a liking to him pretty much right away and kind of makes him his driver, basically. But from that point on, super crazy the whole rest of the way out. Like, you really see the Joker, the way he's drawn in this is really, like, if a lot of people's favorite rendition of the Joker is Heath Ledger, this is basically, you know,
where they stole it from.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is where they got the character look and feel and crazy maniacal, you know, batshit craziness is they got it from this book. So anything you like about that Joker in The Dark Knight, it all comes and stems from Joker, the graphic novel. Like I said, I don't want to give a whole lot of the plot away. There's not a lot to do, but I will say this. One of the first things he does after getting out of prison or out of Arkham is he skins somebody.
Oh, forgot about that.
He skins somebody. So if you think that, you know, Ledger Joker evil, not as evil as this. Want to
see a magic trick?
Yeah.
Human skin suit.
Yeah. Really, really bad. But that's not even the worst thing that he does in this book, like, by far. And it's just shocking the way the art's drawn. You don't see it coming. The cast of characters that you see in it, I really thought it was cool. Like, they have a Killer Croc is in it, and I thought their take on Killer Croc was really awesome. I kind of wish he was in it a little bit more. But you see Harvey Dent, obviously Batman for a little bit, Harley Quinn's in it, Penguin's in it for all little. They're just supporting characters in this. This is very much so a Joker on Front Street. We're going to spotlight him, and it's written so well. And again, connecting with characters, like, you absolutely hate the Joker in this, but he's so damn good at being evil that you keep reading it just to see how crazy he's really going to be. And the end, with the story as twisted as it is, the end is pretty well twisted too. You start feeling for the Frost character, the guy who originally picks him up. He's a very big part of the story. He's not just an afterthought. He's basically, you know, number two to Joker's number one in this book, and a whole lot of fun. The art is fantastic, very dark, very gritty, very opposite of how we were explaining Invincible as being very bright and very friendly and inviting looking. This one is dark, gritty, grimy written. It's a horror story almost. Like, it's really, really good. So if you haven't checked that out, definitely find it and read it. And you will be impressed with it a lot.
And if you do like that one, Brian Roswell has done a couple different books, but one of the kind of a companion book to that one is Noelle. It's a Christmas story.
Oh, Noelle was extremely good. Yeah.
Yeah. It focuses more on that one, focuses more on Batman, kind of like a Christmas story. Not a Christmas story. He doesn't get a BB gun and shoot his eye out. The Scrooge tale.
With Bill Murray?
Not Scrooged, but very similar because obviously it's based on the Scrooge tale. But he gets visited by
different
ghosts.
We're
going to
do a podcast about Bill Murray, by the way.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
We are now.
not now.
No,
it
not
is
now,
requested.
Now.
We are going to look out for it in the near future, people.
Look, you checked my email. There's someone asked. Someone requested it. Gun. All right.
Favorite Bill Murray. Go.
Yep. So, but yeah. So if you like Joker, I do highly recommend Noelle. Brian Azzarello does that one, and it is fantastic.
And also Lex Luthor done in
Luthor.
The same vein.
Luthor's done the same.
That's right. Yeah.
Of Joker, just focusing on the other bad guy instead of the Joker. But both really good. His writing style, super fucked up and very intriguing. So it's definitely worth a look if you're interested in it at all.
And Brian Azzarello has done a lot of different books, not just these ones. I mean, he's a very accomplished writer. These two just happen to be, three, I guess, if you're counting Luther as well. But they're very different takes on those characters, almost like origins in a way, but also like a good look at inside the dark world of Batman as well as Superman, and seeing the true difference in a villain can actually be not just the goofy guy who tries to rob banks and put smiles on people's faces. This motherfucker is legitimately insane.
Guy is not putting poison in your deodorant making you smile and
motherfucker is raping Harvey Dent's wife and it's crazy.
And skinning people.
Yeah. And skinning people, yep. So, Mike, anything else on Joker?
Nope. Like I said, there's not a whole lot you could really... It's a very contained story to explain more of it. We'll kind of give it away.
Yeah.
So, it's a very brief explanation. Sorry about that. But it's totally worth a read. If you haven't read it, go find it. Or if you haven't read it in a long time, go read it again.
Yeah, buy a copy. Joseph, you have another one?
So my next one, it's currently in run right now. They just finished up their first story arc. It is from one of the best writers that is currently gone.
Modern day geniuses, may I say?
And that is Brian K. Vaughan.
Yes. I love you, Brian.
Writer of Why the Last Man, a little book series I think we've mentioned before about how amazing it was. Anyway, written by Brian K. Vaughan, art done by Fiona Staples. Amazing art, by the way.
The art's great. The art is amazingly fantastic in it.
Tremendous.
It follows three main characters: Marco, Alana, and their child Hazel.
Love child.
Their love child. They're basically from warring worlds. The way I was explained when I first heard about this comic book series is that it's much like Star Wars. You have a bunch of two warring factions that have been going at it for years. In fact, to the point in the story where one of the worlds, and I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head, starts to go out of orbit. Yep. And
blown up by the Death Star.
And gets blown up by the Death Star.
No.
After so many centuries of fighting, the two worlds now that they're so far apart have actually brokered a treaty between the two, but have still encompassed other races throughout the universe in their war. The two main characters, Marco and Alana, meet while Marco was imprisoned. Captured and imprisoned.
A prisoner of war.
Yeah. They begin to fall in love actually over a cheesy romance novel. And from there, fast forward, they have a kid. And that's actually where the story begins, is with Hazel being born. Very graphically, by the way. Very graphically.
So, yeah, not to step on your toes, Joe, but yes, that book is tremendous. After it came out, I remember
was the first Brian K. Vaughan book that we really read, wasn't it?
So I had read Why Last Man first. I read some about it being this great story if you wanted. A couple years ago, I went into this like I don't want to call it crisis of faith, but I'll call it crisis of faith in comic books. I'm a huge comic book fan, if you guys haven't noticed yet. I ran into this thing where like I was getting bored with superhero comics. So I went out, and it was funny because the two things that I was told to read, one is a superhero book, Invincible, talked about a minute ago. Mm-hmm. That one brought me back because it kind of revitalized it. But then I read Why Last Man. Blew my mind. It was tremendous. Went out and found some other stuff. Started reading Saga. Started collecting Ex Machina, which is another Brian K. Vaughan book. But it kind of brought me back into the world of comic books more than anything else. But this book, if this is your first exposure to a Brian K. Vaughan story, it's the best fucking way to be introduced to him, because he's a fucking genius, and this shows it. He builds this galaxy, this world, worlds that we go through that are still expanding to this day through the continuing story. They're on issue,
I want to say 14, 15, something like that.
Somewhere around there, 15 or 16, yeah, somewhere around there. And we have yet to even start stabilizing any baseline character groups.
No,
it's expanding and evolving on top of each other. It is fantastic. So when it first started coming out, I jumped on right away because Brian K. Vaughan. I tried to talk Joe into it, but he didn't.
No. That's okay. I wanted to. They just sold out of the first issue faster than I thought they would.
Someone put it in their box. Anyways, it's on 32.
Yeah, it does.
So basically,
a box. Non-comic book nerds.
Yes.
is a lot. If you go to a comic book shop, you can basically make a list of every new release or every, you know, ongoing series that you like. And when they get them in, the first set goes to whoever has it in the box. So if you have, you know, Batman on your list, when they bring in Batman, the first thing they do is put it in the box of everyone who has one. In case anybody was wondering, when we referenced Boxer, it was in the box, or we put it in the box. It's not a dirty sex joke. It's a comic book store thing, and it's very clean and wholesome.
Until we turn it into a sex joke.
Dirty sex joke. But anyways, so you add it, so then it started hitting the media about this book, selling out day one, selling out week two, or month two, month three, and it started hitting it. You started seeing interviews, and Brian K. Vaughan is very non-media friendly. He doesn't like interviews. He doesn't really have a Twitter. He does now only because he uses his company's one for another book that he does, which, by the way, is free. You can get online. It's fantastic. Private Eye, it's awesome. Comic Syndicate, they're fantastic. Anyways, so he was doing an interview with Comic Book Resource, and they asked him, how would you explain Saga to someone who doesn't know what it is? He said he could not.
It's very difficult. Yep. I mean, it honestly is, because especially right now, a lot of stuff is happening, it really is only about these three characters that are just trying to escape a war so that they can live their life as a family.
Yep. It's very simple in its theory, but the way he makes this world and the fact that he's building on top of it. But when the guy who's doing the interview said to him, would you say that it's like Lord of the Rings and Star Wars fucked and had a love story? And he said, yes, and that's exactly what it is. It is like Star Wars, but the biggest difference is it's very barbaric. There's magic users, there's traditional weapons, there's goddamn trees that are rocket ships. I mean, it's fucking out there, but it's so good, and the story is so compelling. And it's the characters are so real. I mean, even from their adopted nanny, who's a disembodied ghost,
yeah,
that can transform, but her precorial form is a girl of maybe 15 who has her entrails hanging out.
Yeah, which is disgusting, but
fantastic.
You love these characters so much. Brian K. Vaughan is so good at writing characters. You begin to attach to even some of the villains in them. Especially the truth and his cat, Lion Cat,
giant sphinx cat that can sense when someone is actually
that
lying.
At one point where you think that
almost
they
threw
were
this fucking
killed.
Book away.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
So heart wrenching. Not to give the last few books away, where they finally meet the author of this romantic novel that really got them together, and then what happens after that, where again he builds up all of these characters. and makes you feel for them, and then you start to lose them. It's so, like, you love it in one sense, and then you hate him so much in another sense that you've made him care for these characters.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. But so, and the story goes so fast. Like, every issue is so quick to read, and it's by Image Comics, which I still love their layout most than all the other two big companies out there. DC and Marvel have this problem about putting ads in the middle of their goddamn stories that
no
completely break up. There are only ads at the very end, but they're not like, oh, t-shirts and shoes with the characters on them. They're literally ads for other stories, other books from Image. So they're paying for themselves. So, and their cost isn't that much higher. So it's crazy to think about. But the cool thing about it is you don't turn a page from being this gorgeous two-page spread of, like, you know, them battling back and forth, or Prince Robot, you know, doing whatever, shooting someone through the chest like a dick face he is. Sorry, got rant there.
Well, actually, on that, I should mention that there is a lot of nudity. I mean, there's not just violence. There is a lot
mature,
of nudity.
Definitely
mature. There's actually, I believe, by issue 5 or so, they go to a world that is just a sex world. That's all that's going
on. It's fantastic.
There. It is fantastic, but this is not a book for young readers.
No. But what I was saying is, so in it, you see this, you know, this world and things like that. But, like, the crazy part about it is these characters are so different than everything else that you've seen. They're just completely lost in everything. But the story doesn't get broken up when you're reading it, because you don't flip to an ad. You leave, you know, you go from a you know, page 23, ad for shoes. It's not that. It goes through and it goes so quick, but it's the same length of every other comic book on the market. It's so insane.
And I think that also speaks to how good Brian K. Vaughan is writing. It just flows like water. Like, I've read comics where you really have to reread something sometimes because you didn't quite understand what was going on. But these books that he writes, they just flow so fast that, like Cody said, they're the same amount of pages as other books. And there's not many pages that don't have words on them. They always have something to say on them. And yet it just goes quickly.
Well, it's not a, like, and this is not a knock at all, because the man's work is genius. But say, like, Frank Miller. You read a Frank Miller, say you read anything from him, you're reading a lot. There is tons of written that you have to get through to get to the story. This one, every page has writing, you know, every panel has something going on. But the way it's written and the way the art's done, it lets you flow through this story so quick, and you don't miss anything. You don't have to sit there and reread pages, you know, carefully study the artwork or anything like that. It just flows super quick.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous. Yep. Fiona Staples does an amazing job of...
Hey, didn't you meet her at the last...
Let's not talk about that.
Hey, how about you go the fuck away? How's that?
Worst thing possible. You don't want to share that story?
Nope. We were shared it once before another podcast.
Yeah, we're not doing that story
so
again.
We're not doing it. But so check it out. The volume 3 of the trade paperbacks just came out. A couple weeks ago, if not last week, or something like that. I remember we saw it.
It was a couple weeks ago, I think.
Somewhere.
They're cheap, too. Each volume, I think volume 1 is like $10. Volume 2 might be $12.
Yeah.
I think $14.99 for the third one. Yeah. But the paperback
they're
costs.
Well worth it. They're tremendous. They look gorgeous. Just so, such good storytelling. Great art. I mean, it's just definitely one of the best modern books that I can't even say is not recognized by most. It was on almost every top 10
before it came out
and stayed on that on top 10 all the way through, even with their hiatus, was still remembered for top 10 of all last year. So yeah. I mean, it has staying power. It's there's no ending to it so far, I can tell, because they're getting, I mean, it's so early in the story, in the infancy, but it's so deep. It's still in history and things like that. It's fantastic. One of my favorite parts about it, before we finished off with that one, basically the way this is going, so if you look at other stuff that Brian K. Vaughan has done, Why the Last Man, Ex Machina, 50 to 60 issues is like his realm for those stories. Mm-hmm. This one looks like it could go 100, if not more, issues, because the main story is not even close to being done, being told.
Has he even said where he plans on stopping yet? I don't think so. So this one might actually go further than his his 60 issue run that I think he did for Why the Last Man.
60 for Why the Last Man, and 50 for, well, 54 if you count the special issues.
Yeah, for Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. So, I mean, it was, it's tremendous. You should check it out. Brian K. Vaughan's Saga, Fiona Staple. Check it out. All right. So my probably last pick, because we're coming up close to the hour, will be a book by Mark Miller. He's a Scottish gentleman we talked about earlier. He did the Michael's First Choice. This book is called American Jesus. When it first came out, it was actually known as Chosen. When it came out in graphic novel form, it was called American Jesus Book 1, Chosen. It is only 3 issues long and needs to be fucking finished, Mark, if you're listening to me. I was promised Volume 2 of American Jesus a while ago. Still not fucking there, but whatever. It is a great book. It is, I'm not going to spoil the ending for you. Not what you expect. It, again, not for kids. Even by the name, I wouldn't ever think this would be for kids anyways. And not your, not a Bible story by any means. It does have to do with the Bible and Jesus, but it is very unforgiving. Fuck, it's unforgiving. It, the story is phenomenal. But it's about an American Jesus. There you go.
It's another one of those ones where you don't want to say too much because you would really give away, especially the ending. Literally the last 2 pages.
Blows your mind.
That was the Cody read this book and then he gave it to me and he goes, dude, just read the last 2 pages. And I was like, okay. So I read the last 2 pages and was like, you're fucking kidding me. That just,
nope.
What? And then I believe I went back and read it some other time. I probably got it on the internet somewhere. Absolutely amazing story.
Yes, very much so. I mean, still one of, to this day, one of Mark Miller's one of my favorite stories by Mark Miller, because,
and that's saying something, dude, because the that guy has a laundry list of
amazing
shit books. Yeah,
I mean, even
yeah.
now, I mean, with I mean, he's the author of Kick-Ass. He's the author of right now, currently writing Starlight, soon to be MPH. He has done. He's on this third series of Kick-Ass right now, but he's the man who basically created the ultimate Marvel universe. So you fucks out there who are watching these Marvel movies, thank Mark Miller, because he's the one that developed the characters you're fucking watching right now. All of them. And I don't care what anyone says. He's the guy who did it. He's the one that brought a modern twist to it and brought a lot of these stories, these origins that you're seeing on them. That's where they came from. It was Mark Miller.
And just a little insight to what we're doing. Cody almost punched everyone in the face right now when he got so mad bringing that up. He's very, very defensive about
that. He gets no fucking credit for it.
No, he doesn't. And when you read anything he does that has to do with Marvel, you definitely see where the movie bit off of that. And not saying they shouldn't have. They totally should have, because it was the perfect way to translate 2 movies. And obviously they made their little tweaks that they had to here and there. But on a whole, it's definitely a Miller universe, though.
Ultimate Miller Universe, Marvel Universe. Sorry, see what I did there? Funny.
Jokes.
So I highly recommend it. It is. It's a great way. If you're, I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you're a Jesus freak, but if you are,
I don't think there's anything inherently.
No,
bad
it's
about
not.
It
it's just.
I mean,
it's great. It doesn't shadow and doesn't like delude your thought of God and things like that. What I was gonna say is, if you're a Jesus freak and you are listening to this, it's actually a great read because of it, because it's like basically the resurrection of Jesus Christ and what would happen and things like that in the modern world. It's fucking amazing. Give it a chance to read. It's real quick, but it's super heavy and super deep. Like the ending will destroy you, but it's fantastic.
Artwork is done by
Peter Gross does the artwork in it. It's very in a way plain, but like.
It's still detailed.
Very
though.
Normal,
I mean, it's
yeah.
Very
it's
nice.
It's again, clean. No flashy colors. It's very nice. It's very amazing art. He does a tremendous job with it. Gorgeous artwork. Very human elements just in the pages themselves. So
you look at like a suburban America type of thing, and that's really exactly what you get on the pages. The imagery,
small
is
town,
exactly
things
that.
Like that. Yep, it's fantastic. So I mean, I love it. It was. Just an amazing read, and I tried to share it with everybody that I could possibly get it in their hands to read. I mean, I forced people to read it because, I mean, it was good. And I actually got it from my friend Matt, who told me about it because I was reading a bunch of Mark's stuff, and he said, oh, you haven't read American Jesus? And I was like, what's American Jesus? He let me borrow it. I finished it in the night, drove down to the comic book store the next day and bought a copy. Luckily, I had one. I bought it and I reread it. I was like, I have to read my copy now because it's that good. I mean, it was just so well done, and like the twist in it, like it's the messed up part is like it's not like one of those things where like you don't see it coming because he hides it. There's no fucking way you would have guessed the end of this book because that twist, it comes out of nowhere. Like, yeah. I mean, it's the definition of twist. They literally paint a picture for you. You get to the end of the book and that fucking picture is not what they painted for you. It was fantastic. No. It was amazing.
Mind blown.
Yep. Yep. So I don't recommend reading the last few pages. I ruined it for Joe, but it was well worth reading. So, yes. They do call me the human spoiler. So
yeah,
sorry about that. But that's it for me on that one. So, we are at the end of our time. We're going to keep these a little bit to an hour or so, but we want to go over some business first. So, Michael, you want to talk about business?
Yeah, to get down to business. Basically, all I wanted to say, we're, like I've been saying in the past, we're still growing this thing. We actually are showing some good growth, like probably a little bit better than expected this early on. Slowly but surely, we're getting more and more downloads. Really, really appreciate it. But we still need some more help. Please continue to download these. Please go to our Facebook page if you haven't already. Like the page, share it with your friends. You can, if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, anything like that, please reach out to any of us. Most of you have our individual Facebooks or know our individual Twitters. But if you want to reach out to our Twitter page, our Twitter handle is
@comesnaturalpod.
That's right. We are getting
nailed this. Yes. You can email us also at comesnaturallypodcast@gmail.com. Like Mike was saying, we have a Facebook page. It is comesnaturallypodcast. So facebook.com/comesnaturallypodcast. We have a Google Plus page, which has no traffic on it. So if you're on that or want to be the first, go like do it.
Tumbleweeds going across the
literally screen. Digital tumbleweeds on there. We have a Tumblr page, speaking of tumbleweeds, which has 2 followers. That was awesome. And I don't think they actually listen to the show, but hopefully they will.
Whatever, you know.
But they're following us.
Cody's gaining a lot of good traction, too, on his personal Tumblr and his personal Twitter and Facebook, doing his reviews of stuff. So definitely check that out, too. Where would they find that for you?
It's the same place. So when you go to, if you want to go to my personal Tumblr page, it is tumblr.com/CodySullivan. It actually has a link on there because those two pages are linked together on there with all the info. You can go to the show's site right now, which is comesnaturally.libsyn.com. That's LIBSYN.com, where you can stream the episodes. You can share the episodes with your friends from there. We're on iTunes. If you could go on there, give us a 5-star rating if you like the show. You can also share that with your friends. Give us a review. The more we get, the more attention is going to attract to the show from outside our own little social network groups, which we've done a pretty good job with. We do have quite a few listeners all over the place. We thank you for that. We would just ask you, please share. If you like the podcast, please share with the people. We need to grow this so we can get a lot more fans.
And reach out to us, too. Like I said, we haven't come close to hitting our stride yet on this. This is only going to continue to get, you know, better, tighter. It's going to run smoother. We'll have it down to a science soon. And it's going to be real entertaining. It's fun to do. Hopefully that translates when you listen to it. And hopefully you have as much fun listening to it as we do getting together every week and doing these. Again, I think most of our traffic has been through iTunes.
Yep.
For it. And we have a couple reviews. We greatly appreciated those. If anybody out there has the time, please give us a rate, give us a review, just so we can get some movement on that too. So hopefully it starts popping up on searches when people, like I said, outside of our social group are looking for something. We want to be able to get to them too. So
that's it for us. On our Facebook page, also, just as for a fun thing, we actually put up a couple pictures of proposed T-shirts that we are hopefully going to sell. Not so much to make money, just to, you know, kind of advertise the show in a way, but they're pretty funny. If you've listened to a couple episodes, there are a few of the shirts that are from episodes we've come up with. There's one that is just for the show itself. It's the first one you see on that list. But there's a couple that, if you've listened to the episodes, they will come up with little shirts. And
if you have questions of what some of those shirts mean, please reach out to us, and we will tell you all the gross details.
It's joedicaria@gmail.com. Just kidding. It's not his actual email address. But you can ask any of us. You can send us a tweet or a message, and we will answer that for you, as long as it's not a relative of mine, because I don't have to explain that to my mom. I'll tell her. I'm sure you will. And I'll send it to Georgia Zimmerman.
Hey, that's my grandma.
All right.
Different.
So
moms and grandmas are different.
It's true. So that's it for this episode of Comes Naturally. We are
Joe,
Mike,
I'm Cody, and that's it. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Peace. Bye. Peace.